This edition of the Optimize We podcast is brought to you by the Biohacking Index. Visit biohackingindex.com for ratings and reviews of your favorite wellness solutions and wellness providers.
This podcast is for informational purposes only. We are not medical professionals and do not provide medical advice. Consult a healthcare provider for any health concerns. Opinions expressed are not a substitute for professional medical guidance.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of the first season of the Optimize We podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay O'Neill O'Keefe, and I am joined by one of my dearest friends, mentors, guiding lights in my life, Victoria Carr. Now, not only is Victoria Carr a spiritual DNA activator, a quantum healer, a high-impact coach, a Columbia University educated psychologist, a human design and gene keys practitioner, a Kundalini yoga teacher, but she's also a mother to four. And less than 2 years ago, somehow with that amazing body of yours, you gave birth to two magical humans, to twins. So anyway, Victoria, I am so blessed and so lucky to know you. And I cannot wait to talk about so many things on this podcast today. So let's get started. Why don't you tell me what a spiritual DNA activator actually means?
Lindsay, well, first of all, what a pleasure and an honor it is to be here. I've watched you through so many renditions of your vision to the world, and it's truly such a joy for me to spend some time with you today. So, spiritual DNA activator, very good question. And most people are not clear exactly what it is and what are we talking about. But my life philosophy resides on premise that we're not material beings, which means that besides our physical DNA that we receive through our physical lineage of mom and dad, there is also the wisdom of our soul. And as a mom of four, I actually witnessed four times now how human beings, those energetic, informational consciousnesses, enter the body and try to make sense of it. And I'm deeply, deeply convinced that it's not accident that our children choose us. And the spiritual DNA, it's the wisdom of their soul. It's that information that is stored within their consciousness, their past life experiences, their trials, their tribulations, their specific gifts that they get to develop in this life as well. So in my work, I help people to rectify their understanding of who they are on the human level, as well as who they are on the divine level. And in the process, we help calibrate back to the divinity of our human experience.
It's so cool to hear you explain it in such a beautiful way, because when I was first explained kind of like this fractional soul idea or this DNA of the soul idea, it was explained to me kind of like the flu. You don't get the same flu virus every year, and you don't get the same entire soul every year, but it is the same flu virus. Just like it is the same soul, it changes and it morphs to survive. And in every life experience, when you're choosing which life you come into, that's what's, you're choosing that based off of how your soul needs to survive or up level in order to achieve the end goal, which is ultimate happiness and connectivity to spirit and source and enlightenment and all of that. So I love how you've expressed it. It's way better than saying it's like the flu virus.
I think you did a great job with defining what's the purpose, right? So the purpose is to reclaim our sovereignty of creation. And I love Rumi. Mm-hmm. And he said something truly beautiful. He said that we are not them. We're not a drop in the ocean. We're an ocean in a drop. Mm-hmm. And I think for most of us, the duality of that fragmentation, like, you know, we come from the source, but we are getting pretty hammered throughout the process. And we forget where we came from. That process of the reclamation is our spiritual initiation. Yeah. The traumas, the trials, the tribulations. So everyone has different framework of remembering, but I think all of us are trying to comprehend how to plug in the grid of life. Unfortunately, our society doesn't have a lot of conversations about it, right, to the point that when you do it for a living, it actually freaks people out a little bit. They're not sure exactly who you are, what you're doing. But back in the different timelines and different civilizations, like let's look at Egypt, they not only believed in the afterlife, they prepared for it.
Right.
They did. So it's probably a disservice for our civilization not to pay attention to those conversations, because human experience is still the same. We still try to rectify mind, body, and spirit. But in the Western world, we have tremendous predisposition to the mental structures, and we prefer thinking over knowing. And I think in the current timeline, all of us are going to be tested in our ability to navigate all of the information overload we are currently experiencing, to figure out what actually is true for us.
Everybody raise your hand if you're experiencing that right now.
Me included, you know, it's our collective assignment. And you see, my Instagram is called Rise to Legendary, because we are the legendary generation. And we are going to be either the legend of collective destruction or the legend of collective ascension. And each human being on planet Earth plays a role right now, because sometimes when we talk about voting and politics, we don't recognize our sovereign power of creation. If you ever watched Matrix, which is like one of my favorite movies of all times, the construct of Matrix is not artificial. It's actually quite accurate. Our collective is the sum total of our own human experiences. So what happens to you has a ripple effect on others. And in my work, what we do, we help you transcend the traumatic experiences, the karmic wounds, the energetic incongruences that may not allow you to truly be you. But that's such a deep question to begin with, because most of us have learned to be us through the prism of thinking, not through the prism of knowing. And in our collective agreement, we prefer Newtonian reality, which is three-dimensional, there are only five senses, and we discredit any kind of magical or supernatural. So in a way, I'm trying to biohack our understanding of our identity. And it's pivotal work, because I was trained as a psychologist in one of the best universities of the world.
In Columbia.
But it was very heartbreaking for me, because at the end of my tenure there, I had more questions than answers. And that's how I knew that we are operating in a limited model of mental predisposition, of figuring out logically what's right and wrong. And as a mom, you know that sometimes it's not logical. You get an impulse, you know, something is off. So where do we approach that cognitive dissonance of logic versus intuition? And how do we train ourselves, humans, to actually be more holistic in our experiential awareness? Because right now, you and I are speaking, but there are certain wavelengths, and probably, you know, there is a radio frequency of a different country and a different language that our ear is not attuned to hear. Mm-hmm. So you and I are here now, but there is so much more that is happening, even in this conversation. So who dictates that attunement? And can we expand our attunement to actually honor the multidimensional aspect of who we are? And that has been the question that I've been absolutely obsessed with. And that's the question that brought me to so many countries, so many lineages, trying to figure out how other nations, how other societies are doing this human experience. And I think we have a lot to learn, truly.
So my mom calls it Earth School. We're all through Earth School. And I see you as kind of the master professor of Earth School. Because right now, the Earth School curriculum that we're being handed is very much more complex than what we've seen previously here on Earth. There is a greater awakening to a different type of exercise that we can participate in order to achieve better marks or better grades on our Earth School tests that are coming our way, right? So if you think about Earth School and you think about the tools that you were given as a teacher in traditional modern psychology, it only will allow you to get to maybe a C level, you know, maybe a D, but you're not going to fail. You're going to survive. You're just not going to thrive. You're not going to get an A or a B in that particular course because you're missing the whole connective tissue and the lesson that is outside of the mental. It's more about the spiritual. And I was going through something last night that was really disappointing to me. And I've had a hard time regulating my own emotional state because I'm in perimenopause and, you know, like 9 out of 9 women, I think, that are going through perimenopause struggle with rage and focus. And I was going to say 9 out of 10, but I think it's all of us. I think it's 100% of us. And so I had to really dig deep and be grateful for this lesson and be grateful for the person who really frustrated me showing me their true colors and having the intuitive nature to ask the right questions to get to that point where, yes, I felt pain, but it also allowed me to elevate my reaction, my thought process around this particular person. But then also, you know, how does that work within my business? Because this was a business issue. It wasn't a personal issue. And so I was grateful for all of that. But you have done so much work with not just the lay person, you know, the everyday person, but also the celebrity, because you're helping to get that celebrity's whole being to be like activated on a certain level so that not only can they perform at a high level and get those high marks for themselves, but they can also inspire thousands, millions of others, right? With the lessons that you've been teaching them. So tell me a little bit more about like who you work with and how this manifests.
So I do believe that we're all made out of stars. And it's actually on the biochemical composition, absolutely true. So celebrities is a very broad definition. I work with people that take on missions on behalf of collective to shift our collective narrative and to make us truly a legendary generation. The work happens very quickly and the impact becomes very noticeable. And the reason why is once you give your cognitive structures permission to embody the divinity of your own soul, the game changes. You pretty much find your own God particle, but it's not somewhere, you know, on the clouds where someone is sitting and judging you. It's actually within. And once this process gets activated in your consciousness once you take responsibility for the creative power that we all have. You are no longer subject to curses. Nothing and no one has power over you. You get to create unapologetically. And in my life, I try to preach what I teach. You collapse time and space. I delivered 4 kids. 2 of them were twins. I don't have stretch marks. And it's not a vanity statement. It's what's possible even at the level of the body. I delivered naturally at 38 weeks. My daughter was 6'7". My son was 6'5". The doctors could not believe. We literally walked away from the hospital with children. And my daughter, who is 16 months old, just got fever for the first time.
Wow.
Like, that is unprecedented, and this is my personal result, I guess. Once you master energy, your life becomes a thriving journey. Now, it doesn't mean that it's easy, but there is a certain ease with which you can calibrate your results and your outcomes. So I really help people to restructure their emotional digestive system. We all have certain predispositions in terms of what we can and can't tolerate in life, how much wealth, how much love, how much joy.
Did you call this an emotional digestive system?
Yes, that's exactly.
I've never heard you say that before. I love that.
But that's, I think, the easiest way for me to explain, because when we work with our bodies, we know that some of us are gluten intolerant, but we don't always realize that there may be an abundance allergy in our own being. And unless you actually proactively, consciously work on it, it would be a push and pull. You will attract money, then you will lose money. So we all have to transcend that survival instinct in all of us, because for the past 2,000 years, we lived under a very strong energetic coding of animalistic nature. And some people call it Piscean Age. Mayan calendar expired in 2012, not because the world was over, but because the new era has begun. So this is the timeline, and you energetic calendar, I guess, which many call Aquarian Age. And this is the timeline where we are going to integrate the masculine and feminine. We're going to integrate the spiritual and the material. It is a process of integration. So
that process of integration is very rooted in faith, because of our desperate actions previously. And actually, the frustration I had last night came from a desperate person who made a desperate decision that, you know, impacted me negatively. And I feel like I've made many desperate decisions in my life. And so I can't have any judgment for this person, because I've done the same thing. I've been trying to survive as a single mom. I tried to survive as a child being raised in a broken home with a single parent in a one-bedroom apartment in New York City with no resources. I tried to survive my own illness, my daughter's illness. And when we are in this desperate place, when we come from this desperate place, we'll do nearly anything, even if it's outside of our own morals and ethics. Like, I consider myself a highly moral, highly ethical person. You know, I run an efficacious ratings and reviews platform for biohacking companies, because I don't want the snake oil salesman and the made in China nonsense to be sold for a premium, or I just don't want the wool to be pulled over desperate people's eyes, because there's so many companies that are out there. There's so many people that take advantage of the desperation of humanity. So anyway, I just wanted to...
No, it's a beautiful point that you're making. I think what you're trying to figure out is how. How do we move out of survival when the stakes are so high and we feel like our life is at stake? So I'm going to share with you my time in South Africa. I was actually very blessed to work in the rhino orphanage, and I did it for my own research and development, because I actually have a framework that helps people move out of the survival into thriving. And it's step-by-step process so that your mental structures can actually understand and not freak out, because you will be tested. This life creates certain experiences of danger. And those people that know how to handle the uncertainty, those people that know how to be in the eye of the hurricane, they usually succeed. So during my time in South Africa, I actually had an opportunity to study people that come from the same communities. And some of them kill rhinos, and others actually save rhinos by giving the milk, sometimes from their own children, to rhinos.
Wow.
And I was very intrigued to understand, what is that qualifier? What makes a person from the same collective with the same access to the resources do the right thing or the wrong thing, right? Without like having a judgment attached. And you know what it was?
What?
It was their understanding of connectedness of life.
Wow.
So I do believe that some people carry a spiritual trauma of being separated from each and one of us. And in my work, my biggest devotion, my biggest prayer is to help people rectify that separation, that foundational primordial abandonment wound. That, you know, that we are no longer part of the divine essence of life that holds us all. So, like, how do we become, again, an ocean as a drop, as Rumi said, right?
What does that really feel like, though, that disconnection?
It feels like fear. It feels like shame. It feels like guilt. So Dr. David Hawkins has a beautiful framework around the frequency of the emotions. And he says that everything below neutrality, which is shame, guilt, fear, it shrinks your energetic field. And when you're in those shrinking energetic states, you can't really feel love. You can't really feel connected, because you ultimately lost your balance and you went into the identity and egoic structure that feels like you are going to die. So it takes tremendous training. Well, not, you have to learn, you have to train your nervous system to be able to zoom out of those dense and very real emotional entanglements.
Yeah.
To be able to not lose sight of who you are as a human being and what is right and what is wrong. And unfortunately, our society...
That's hard to do, especially when you're, you know, you're in the middle of it, right? So you're in the middle of the storm.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I also work with Native collectives. So we work with Hopi elders and Hopi lineage, and we also work with Navajos, and every tribe is different. But they have an innate daily reverence to the connectedness of life. So most people misunderstand why Native American people are still living on the reservations. They can leave, like, nothing really, like, there are no borders there. You can just cross and leave. But they feel very responsible for the sacred lands that were given to them. And it's a conversation that happens from the elder to the child, from the mother to the daughter. So there is a certain linguistic ethos about sacredness of life and what it means to respect life. Western society cracked itself and unplugged itself through several philosophical movements, I think. In my opinion, the first one that really screwed it up for us, and he tried to rectify it, was the Survival of Species by Darwin. Darwin did not want us to become competitive beings, but it landed really nicely on our narcissistic yeah, temptations of kind of like having it all and being it all. So we kind of like took it collectively and we ran with that. And it caused a lot of harm, not only for our civilization, because even in the school system, we are all set out to compete with each other instead of collaborating with each other. But if you think about the nature of longevity, for example, it's been already studied and proved that those people that live longer, they actually have communal reverence and they have strong relational dynamics in their life. So
of all the people that I've interviewed on this podcast, I always ask the question, like, what's the one biohack that you do for living better longer, for having that, you know, lengthening of the telomeres? And most people say, you know, it's not necessarily even their device or technology that they create. They say it's about their emotional state. But your emotional state is very much tied to, if not 100% tied to, your community and the people that you have as close connections in your life. It's your husband, it's your wife, it's your sister, it's your daughter, it's your nephew, it's your cousin, it's your employees, it's your colleagues, it's your best friends. And those people that you're communing with, that's actually the highest indicator scientifically for how long of a life you're going to live and also the quality of your life, right?
So let me take it even deeper.
Okay.
I think it's about your capacity to be intimate.
Mm.
Intimate with yourself and intimate with others. Because, you know, most of us have to have some collective communal component. It's really hard to live completely in isolation, especially when you live in places like New York, for example. But it's actually the quality of those relationships, because you probably know a lot of people that on surface have a lot of followers, but they're actually deeply alone.
Yeah.
So I want to bring the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, because for most of us, the tipping point, like the top of the pyramid, is self-actualization. But, you know, at the end of his life, Maslow actually created another layer to it. And most psychology books don't even talk about it, because it requires some level of reconciliation in the spiritual realm. And that next layer was actually self-transcendence. And in order for you to self-transcend, you first have to become intimate with all the aspects of who you are. And as you're learning how to be your true self, you know, mind-body-spirit integration, you also learn how to hold people in a different way.
I was going to say, so the self-actualization is really more about the harmony of the mind, body, and soul, right? And then the transcendence is now being able to kind of put yourself in that bubble so that all of the life experiences, the other people's stuff, their baggage, their trauma, whatever, doesn't affect you. But then you can also hold them inside that bubble with you without it protecting.
I just love how your brain works. Can we just leave it there? So for me,
I want to make it really easy to understand and visualize for people. Like that's the one gift that I really have had.
Absolutely.
Career. And I think that this conversation is at such a high level that, but it's so important for everyone, no matter what level you're at, whether you feel completely out of control and down in the depths of despair, and you're desperate and you're scared and you feel guilty and alone, or you're kind of somewhere around the self-actualization phase, you just haven't had that transcendent moment. Yeah.
Well, let's try to give some practical advice, because I think, you know, a lot of conversations and podcasts, they're very like generic.
Yeah.
What do you do if you're in the midst of anger or rage? You know, and that's I really want to talk about rage because I think we as a society are so sterilized around negative emotions, but I will testify through my own evolution that without rage, joy is also unavailable. Because
I said that because I've been blaming a lot of my rage episodes lately on perimenopause, but I also feel like I have so much gunk in my system that it's almost like I'm now in this biohacking and new relationship and I feel so open.
Beautiful relationship.
Power washing my colon and all the shit's coming out.
Well, and you're probably right because we are exposed to the unprecedented amount of toxins. But it's also like, but you can hack all of that through brain frequencies. So for those of us that know how to get to like higher or slower brain waves, so our life is very demanding. And most of us have fragmented not only identities, but also nervous systems. And it starts at a very young age because we are set to compete. So there is always never enough kind of like dynamic. You probably can relate to it. Like,
I'm a New Yorker. Come on, Victoria.
Well, I've been on the East Coast long enough too to kind of like carry the same traits. And what happens to us is that we all become perpetual high beta survivors. So if you look at the evolution of humankind, we typically would live in high beta when we needed to chase like a mammoth or when there was like immediate danger and it was a survival moment. But now with all of the informational overload we get, most of us live in those exaggerated states of consciousness that don't really serve us. Like someone posted a comment and we go in high beta reaction. So that is a dysregulated nervous system. Another challenge that works against us is that like if you and I gaining like 5 pounds, we kind of like see it and we're like, okay, tomorrow we having a, you know, fast day.
But,
right. But when it's about mental structures, we can't really gauge how off course we are because there is no benchmark. Now you add a component of coming and being grown up in a trauma. My parents got divorced when I was 3. I come from a very, very traumatized society. I was born in Russia. That level of collective and individual stress causes permanent neuro-linguistic and also just very challenging locked in nervous system. And it is your responsibility as a grown-up adult to work on mastering it. So I work with people to master their inner game when their out game is already conquered. And that's the place in the Maslow's hierarchy of needs when you kind of like self-actualized, but you're standing on top of this pyramid and you're like, okay, this feels lonely and I feel a little anxious and I'm not sure how many friends I actually have. Because now after you completed it all and you already approached life from the masculine, achievement, accomplishment, next, you carry your life force in front of you, chasing another goal, another million, whatever it is. At some point, you will realize that it will not get to where you actually want to get, which is freedom. And freedom, in my opinion, is to do what you want, when you want, with whom you want. And most of us don't have that definition of freedom, but it requires you to first free your nervous system because without that, you will always should and must yourself in situations and circumstances that are not in your best interest. And most of us have lost our ability to actually figure out what is an authentic yes for us and what is an authentic no for us. That binary system of your own individuated truth has been corrupted.
Well, there's also the societal pressure of feeling like you have to be in integrity all the time. You know, I always used to lie to myself and say, well, I can't miss this because I'm a high integrous person. And I told them that I would show up when it actually was a no from the beginning. But I said yes because I was shooting all over myself and I should say yes and I should be there. And so there's the societal.
But hold on a second. Yeah. But where did you lie? You see, you lied to yourself. You said that it was a yes when in reality it was a no.
Right.
And now you're trying to rectify that lie with yourself.
Correct.
In order not to break your word.
Right.
So that is an internal self-abuse.
Right. And that is being out of integrity with yourself.
So I do believe that every single human being that is born in this timeline is out of integrity with her or himself. In fact, when I work with people energetically and the realm of work I do, we all are energetically tilted through shame, guilt, obligations, the identity structures that we had to build in order to survive as children, as successful adults in a very dysfunctional reality. I always say that it is not a sign of success to be well adjusted to a sick society. And that's exactly what most of us are trying to do. So at some point, those people that come to me, they want more, but they realize that the version of themselves that got them successful up to here won't give them the success that they truly long. So that's when the intimate work begins. This is when we go inwards and really look at your definition of good and bad and your energetic digestive system. Because all the answers are within. We just learned how to bypass our own truths and our own awarenesses. And if you do it for 10, 30, 50 years, that suppressed rage works against you. And I think that most women that go through, you know, birthing a child and they sit with that initiation of life and death, because let's be honest, things can go wrong. Yes, medicine is very advanced nowadays, and still it is a scary experience. It takes your identity to completely new level. Most of us don't have a lot of tolerance to bullshit. Please forgive me for swearing on your podcast. So that rage is actually sacred. And I will share with you how I came to reclaim my own rage, because my hope it will give other people permission not to look at it as a bad thing. I was in deep prayer trying to figure out what good looks like for a woman. So my prior career was actually banking. I spent 10 years in banking before becoming a psychologist. Like, total career shift. Surprise, surprise. And I literally had to burn my life to the ground, because the beautiful life that I've built, like, you know, self-actualizations, the husband, the two kids, the townhouse with the view of Manhattan, the luxury SUV, it felt so empty to me. I didn't know who I was. So I had this gorgeous life and I could not find myself in that gorgeous life. And my biggest challenge that I realized I had was when I was delivering my second son, and I literally said a prayer, praise God, don't give me a girl, because I do not know what to do with all of this. And when I heard myself saying that, it broke my heart, because I understood that I figured how to be on the masculine spectrum. I was very successful. The year I had my first son, I took maternity from banking and I still made it top 10%. Like, that is not a sign of success. That is a sign of overcompensation. So I've done the output so well, but I was burned inside. So when I heard myself saying that, I really went on deep, deep journey of trying to figure out what good looks like as a feminine. And unfortunately, we live in the society where feminine is disqualified and not revered. And it has to do with our inability to honor the sacredness of life, period. We are very self-individuated. We prefer ourselves versus collective. It's a state of our collective value system at the point, which lands very nicely on narcissistic personality types. And, you know, if you want to be an influencer, you kind of like have to have a certain comfort level around, you know, showcasing yourself. So to return to back to
survival, there is a aspect of survival in narcissism.
So I think narcissism is an energetic, it's an energetic imprint of survival.
Yeah.
It's someone who absolutely regrets or rejects shame and guilt. And that's why there is this dualistic dance between empathic people and narcissistic people, because narcissistic people project the guilt out, like what's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And empathic people take on this responsibility, what's wrong with me? And they try to change themselves. They try to be better partners. And that dance becomes very codependent because it clicks energetically. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with me? So in my evolution, I had to look at my own narcissistic imprint and how much of responsibility and guilt and shame I carry in my own body. Now, let's just be truthful. We are shameful even about, like, we are shamed about rage. So the solution or the healing that I found was in a very unlikely place. It was in the path of Magdalene. So for those of the listeners who do not know, Mary Magdalene was proclaimed a whore and a prostitute, but she was someone who actually brought the news that Jesus resurrected in the tomb to the apostles. And according to Jewish law, only a wife or a mother had access to the tomb. So Catholic Church, who had a certain agenda of promoting masculine patriarchal structures, didn't have Google Translate, so they didn't know how to cross-reference the Jewish law. And it probably saved my life because it gave me a breadcrumb to look further into who this woman was. And she was a logistics queen. She was a whole and complete human. So I think Jesus and Magdalene are very powerful examples of what's possible for humanity that walks with their divinity. And I'm truly grateful to have those keys to be able to share it with my clients. But in the Magdalene wounding, there are three primary wounds. Sacred bitch, talking about rage. Sacred witch, how well do you actually hold your magic and your capacity to sense life, sense your intuition, be in those intuitive states of flow? And sacred whore, the woman that really honors her pleasure. So for most women of the Western world, those three words became very toxic. They became something bad, including rage. Yet right now, women that hold their truth, women that hold their power, women that hold their value, live their entire society because we say no more. We say that's enough. So I encourage everyone to listen to their anger because it's a sign of violated internal boundary. And most of us were not allowed to build that relational dynamic with rage. My children, when we were going through divorce, we actually had rage parties. I would literally pull out the mattress and we would have like candles and we would scream and yell because I knew that I needed to help my children deal with this, the fact that our family unit, as we know, is going to be dismantled. And it was very upsetting to them. And I remember one day I picked up my son from school and he's like, "Mama, drive. I need a rage party," you know? And I just felt so grateful that I could hold him in all of his pieces. And I think if you look at the native cultures, they have a very succinct relational dynamic with all of the human expression, with death, with violence. We pretend that we're not sexual beings from 9 to 5, you know, we're professional. It doesn't land well for us because it only causes more fragmentation.
What does that mean? So tell me more about that.
So I have a friend, and she actually went apprenticed with Hawaiian tribes. And in Hawaii, there is, I guess, ritual when one of the tribesmen does something wrong. There is like a sacred rock, and it kind of like, you know, those crazy, you know, stories. If you touch the rock, the tribe will let you go because the gods blessed you and you are innocent. So she was very much in disbelief that in our timeline, they still do something like that. And the elders set her down. And they asked her to look at the TV screen of our daily Netflix or whatever. And they kind of like brought to her awareness how unconsciously violent we are programmed to be through all of the murders we see. So we try to pretend we're not that. We kind of like think we're the spiritual beings and we're so evolved and we're so civilized. But in reality, how we talk to each other and at each other is a huge, huge sign of where we are in that evolutionary spiritual scale. So I think us as a society, we have to not only value the intelligence and the emotional intelligence, but also spiritual intelligence.
And that is true queendom or kingdom. So acting like, if you think, for those of you who are just listening and can close your eyes for a second, if you think about the person who embodies spiritual wisdom and physical wisdom. Wisdom is really, it's threefold, right? It's having knowledge, experience, and time. Because even with experience, if you only have that experience once and for a short amount of time, you're not really becoming wise to how you're reacting, responding, growing, learning, shifting, shaping. And then over the course of time, you can start to develop that wisdom. I see that as the king and the queen, right?
Beautiful.
And I know that you do a lot of work using the queendom word. So what does that mean to you in your practice?
So when I started my own healing journey, I started realizing that women don't really have like energetic or emotional real estate, because in that Christian doctrine, we have the kingdom of heaven and we have a Trinity, but Trinity is actually masculine. There is no Holy Spirit daughter and mother. There is Holy Spirit son and father. So I felt so orphaned because it felt like, okay, there is this divine mother energy, but I don't know where she is. I don't know how to connect to her, like where, how, why. So I became very nerdy, as you can probably say already and see already. I started doing research, and something happened as the rise of Christianity, because Christian tradition was very much based on this monotheistic understanding of God. When pagan tradition, there is divinity in everything. There is a divinity in thunder. There is a divinity in sun. So it was very interesting for me to like give myself space to actually reclaim myself. And that's how Claim Your Queendom came together. So Claim Your Queendom is my container. It's a one-on-one container that I take women through to help them integrate their masculine and feminine and remember who they are on the soul level, remember their gifts, and also build life based on their rhythm. Because, you know, human design gives you great awareness that not everyone is sacral energy driven. Some people have completely different energetic preferences and structures, but we are all put in this mold of success and what it looks like for us. And we don't really respect our own rhythms. So that was my idea behind. I really wanted to give women permission to do life on their terms. And obviously, most of us have a lot of energetic conclusions in terms of how success looks like. And you have to really question, is that success in alignment with your soul values? So you and I, we met Queen of Bhutan a week ago.
I was going to ask if you remembered what she said before when you were saying that how we deal with our trauma is our responsibility, because she stood up on stage and she said something that really impacted me. She said, trauma is not our fault, but it is our responsibility.
I use this statement all the time. And I think that's what Dalai Lama sees when he mentions that the world is going to be saved by a Western woman. Because let's be honest, we don't have to fetch food for our children or hide in shelters. Those of us that live in the Western society have a responsibility for their own trauma and also the vision and the future of the collective. And that is so important for us to be those queens in our own queendoms and also building that energetic congruency in terms of how queendom plugs in into kingdom. Because I work with men as well, and there is this warfare type dynamic between masculine and feminine at the moment. I promise you, there are not a lot of men that wake up in the morning and think how to, you know, abuse a woman, how to pass her for promotion. Because for most men, Me Too movement is also very dear. They have daughters, they have wives, they have sisters. So we have to stop.
Spent a lot of time really going after the white man, honestly. The white man has become like the devil in our society.
And I'm concerned about that because my children will have a hard time holding a hand of their beloved. You know, do I have your consent to hold your pinky? That's where we are as a collective at the moment. It's quite ridiculous, actually. So what I heard the queen say is to use the voice that we have, the voice that our foremothers may not have had. Use that voice wisely.
Yeah, she did.
So Bhutan is a very unique place because the king of Bhutan is a well-educated politician. He actually went to Oxford. So if you look at the trifecta of emotional intelligence, intellect, and spiritual intelligence, the head of this country has all three. And that's why there is such a predominant overall happiness in that society, and they live in tremendous reverence of all sentient beings. So,
happiest country on the planet.
So what's interesting about Bhutan is that it still carries the divine patriarchy, and the divine patriarchy is very different from what we think of patriarchy, because when we go into the definition of patriarchy, we immediately think it's bad. You know, as a woman, we feel oppressed, but it's not patriarchy, it's actually misogyny. And the divine patriarchy has those three components of spiritual intelligence included as well, where the head of the country or the head of state is the most educated and spiritually evolved person. And those things have been actually nurtured in them. Dalai Lama studied tremendously to take on the leadership role of his nation. It wasn't just based on the proximity to power or proximity to clan. So it's a very different hierarchy compared to what we see in traditional royal houses, even in Europe or in the United States. We don't really have royal houses, but what we have is the clans, you know, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers. And if you're born in the right family, you have certain leverage financially, energetically. So this is the timeline where the clans of queens is rising. And each one of us has unprecedented potential. The question is, are we going to sit in our wounding or are we going to transcend it? And it's a very complex conversation because obviously trauma is real, and whoever tells you to just bypass it will not do you a service. But there is a way of not reactivating the same trauma over and over and transcending it. So I've spent 10 years developing those protocols, and those protocols work. And a lot of my work is around wounding, mother wound, sacrifice wound, whore wound, witch wound. What the wounds are, they're just energetic entanglements. You can transcend it all on the level of your identity, but you need to be willing to actually architect something outside of that identity. And your ego won't like it because your ego is already cemented in that experience on the biochemical level. So that's the difficult part, because in a way, you have to transcend your own definition of what's possible. And there is a part of you that doesn't want to go there. There is a part of you that learned how to feel safe in your own survival. And
for many of us, we've been told now through like the biohacking world and through the wellness industry that you have to do ketamine treatments or plant medicine in order to let that ego die in order to heal. But the program that you have created, you don't have to go, you know, do bufo or ayahuasca or anything like that, right?
So I do believe those medicines have place and time. Like, there is a tremendous pandemic of ketamine addiction in our collective at the moment that not everyone talks about, which is very concerning to me as a professional. So I will say this. You are your own pharmacy. You can transcend your own states, and you can train yourself through the brain waves to be your own evolution. Sometimes people need additional reinforcement. So I'm not against shortcuts. I'm not against... I'm actually not big on drugs or pharma to begin with. I believe that a lot of answers are within us. But psychedelics have been very helpful in my journey if they're done in a ritualistic place and space and time. But now every single person has become a shaman suddenly. You know, they do their job, work 9 to 5, and then they become shamans on the weekends. So that creates a lot of potential for mismanagement.
You have to be careful. I mean, this is one of the things that I always try to teach people. It's not just about when you're in the grocery store flipping the label around and reading the label. It's also about being a discoverer and a truth seeker in your own life and finding the right guides who can help you navigate certain areas that are experts in what they do. Now, you're a specific guide to helping women unlock the power, you know, and claim their queendom. Does that take 8 years? Does it take 8 months? Because at the end of the day, we're still high-functioning type A personalities who are on a timeline. So tell me a little bit more about what that requires.
So my big premise is that we work really fast. So what I start with the mother wound, because mother wound is, even if you have a great relationship with your mom and this wound is not designed to separate you from your mother, it just gives you permission not to carry the karmic wounds of your lineage. So we actually rectify that within a month during 4 sessions. And the reason why it's possible is because we actually unplug people from the trauma-induced identity and create a pathway to a higher self. Mm-hmm. So it's really beautiful. And if there is one gift that I want to deliver to every woman in our collective, it would be a mother wound. We are looking currently how to scale it, to do it on the mass level, because I'm a perfectionist. And when I work with a human body and human mind and human soul, it's like an operation. I'm very devoted to be there fully 100%. I'm looking at the way to do it more on the group scale. Right now, it's only one-on-one work. But I really hope that I will find a way without compromising the quality to deliver it to more women. Because in my opinion, every single woman has to give herself permission to create her own queendom and not repeat the destiny of the mother. Now, how does it look like in our daily life? If you have a pattern that repeats itself with a business client, with the relationship, with men, if you find yourself saying, they always do that to me, chances are you are under the spell of that karmic program. All it is information, but that information has already created a certain energetic signature that affects your energetic digestive system. We go in and we transcend it, so there is no more gravitational pull of that imprint, so that you can suddenly honor men instead of suspecting them to be narcissists. Because I promise you, there are a lot of men out there that are not bad. It's just the reference point that we keep preventing us from finding true love. And sometimes those reference points, they are not cognizant. They're not in our conscious awareness. Like, I have people that come to me and they want love, but they're petrified of intimacy. So that's like one step forward and two steps backwards, because no matter which relationship you're going to enter, in order for the relationship to be real, you have to master intimacy. So we learn first how to be intimate with ourselves, so that we can be intimate with others. And
within also teaching that always already listening. So that fine-tunement of how we're also listening to people and not setting them up for failure, because our brains are not meant to make us happy. They're meant to keep us safe. And so in many cases, even if we are in a relationship with a healthy man, we are projecting our own fear onto them and almost treating them in a way that is triggering to them, so that we're forcing them into a bad pattern of behavior to prove ourselves right. Look at that. He's not the perfect man. He's not a good man. He's actually a terrible man. And I've found that at, you know, many points in time in different relationships that I've had. So that's an incredible mother wound healing journey. So that's the first step. And how do people get signed up to get started on healing their queen?
Well, they can DM me. This work is effective, but it requires courage, because you will be taken to the edge of your own awareness of life and what's right and what is wrong. So it requires your devotion to your own self and to your own divinity. And the reason why I do this work is because I believe feminine is the divine temple. And those women that I had the pleasure of working with, they literally activate both men and women in the remembrance of what love, truth, honesty, integrity looks like. You've met some of my clients. It's a different energetic wavelength. Like, they show up differently. So my goal is to build an army of queens, and I will not stop till I succeed.
I want to sign up as one. And so if I were to DM you, I would either go to Facebook and go to Spiritual Financier.
Yeah. Instagram is the best. It's Rise to Legendary.
Rise to Legendary on Instagram. If you don't have Instagram, they can also go to LinkedIn, right, and look you up, Victoria Carr, K-A-R, not C-A-R, and they can DM you on LinkedIn as well.
Absolutely. Or they can send me an email, info@victoriacarr.com. It is our collective mission to be the queens of our queendom so that we can return humanity back to its sacredness. It starts with us, woman.
I wish I had 17 more hours to talk to you about this, because I want to dive into how this plays into being a mother and the responsibility that we have, because I feel it underlying, not just as a mother of daughters, but I assume that being a mother of sons is probably even more of a responsibility, right? Because you now are using that feminine to inspire that true, empowered, what do you call it, spiritual patriarchy, not the misogyny side of it, which is also the mother wound.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then all of it stems from a mother. So you're 100% right. And that's why the entry point of my work is to look at that primal wound. And I also work with men. So if this message resonates, men are absolutely welcomed and invited. And there is so much desire in them to provide and protect us. They just don't always know how. And we as women are not always welcoming of their help.
I don't remember the last time I asked for help. So if that
well, you know, you can always call me.
I think you might be the last person I asked for help, but in our relationships with our husbands, our fathers, and other men in our life, that is one of the keys to the queendom, is being vulnerable enough and being in our feminine to ask for them to protect and provide for us, and not just accept, and not just be passive aggressive about it. But I love you.
I love you.
So helpful, not just when I ask for it, but you also force me a little bit.
Good. I'm happy.
And I love that about you, because I'm a stubborn New Yorker who, you know, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. But I've been trying to draw my boundaries, but maybe not in the exact queen claiming of my kingdom.
Well, DM me on Instagram.
I'm blessed.
Send me an email. And we'll book a consultation. You know, it's no obligation. But if you feel that it resonates, it kind of like stirs and the conversation started something for you, definitely pick on that inner awareness and go deeper, because the answers are within, truly.
And it has. It's stirred a lot inside of me, and I hope it does for all the people listening. Reach out to Victoria Carr, info@victoriakarr.com. Check her out on Instagram at the Rise to Legendary, and not the, just at Rise to Legendary. And you can find her on LinkedIn too if you're not on social media. But Victoria, I treasure you. I honor you. Thank you so much for spending your time, sharing your energy, your passion, your purpose with us. And I cannot wait to continue this conversation and become a queen in your posse of queen ladies.
You already are. It's just a remembrance. We are already. We just forgot. Truly, we are.
I love that.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was such fun, and what an honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure is all mine.